Hey, guys! Hey! I'm having a press conference, okay? Thank you!
Great young man. So proud that we have him. Great parents. And we're excellent young man. We had to fix the line of scrimmage. We wanted to get bigger. I'll stop.
Hey! Stop the ball! Stop the drill! I'm having a press conference! Thank you!
You're paying the toll at Exit 31. Here is Rain and WKTV Sports Director Spencer Davidson on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com.
Let's hear from Spencer now, real quick. Turn up his mic a little bit, glue guy. Spencer, hi. Nothing to say for yourself today? You know why he's not here?
Because he's crying about the Jets.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to say. Spencer Davidson will not be with us today and or tomorrow. He will be back, but I think that he avoided that. I mean, that was a blowout of epic proportions.
And wasn't he the one saying the Patriots are trash?
Yeah. Well, I said
all season.
I said the same thing, too, but they didn't play my team and get blown out, so I guess we'll deal with that. Glue guy stepping in back into a very comfortable and familiar spot. Mike number two, it's good to have you back in here, dude. How you been? What's going on? You got to get some thoughts on this Syracuse football game with me. It was pretty amazing. You didn't come in studio, so you didn't jinx anything. Didn't that happen in a previous post game? I hosted post game the other day.
That's correct, yes.
What game was that? Do you remember? It was like,
no.
You were here, but then you left. Like, I think it was in the fourth quarter, something along those lines.
It was a night game. I remember that.
Was it the Ohio game? I got to get to the bottom of this. It's one of those stupid things that doesn't matter. It's going to bother me unless I figure it out, and I don't know why. That's crazy. Did you like what Matt Park did with the final call of the game? I thought I would share that with everybody. It was very, very smooth how you worked in the Metallica there. Garrett Schrader saved the day. Man, two touchdowns in like the last 3 minutes. Five overall for him. 400 yards of offense. Just an unbelievable performance. It was Mike McAllister. I was reading his recap a little bit earlier, and he said it. He's got an it factor. That's what it is. It's an it factor. There's
yes,
just something about him. He rises to the occasion. And wow, just what doesn't he do? And he's got a great beard, too. Look, did you figure it out yet?
Liberty.
It was a Liberty game?
Yeah.
It was a Liberty
yes.
game? Okay, so you can't hang.
So you're welcome.
So I'm glad you're here, though. You want to hear the final call?
Yeah, I heard this call being named Exit Sandman.
Exit Sandman.
It's first down, clock running at 25, snap back. Schrader hit on the release, ball's down the seam left. Alfred reaches up,
touchdown!
He's got it! He's into the
touchdown!
End zone! He's off the never land, and the Orange have the lead!
He's going to get to 1,000 yards as well. I got a couple of DMs about that. That's going to happen. I mean, guess who's already there, though?
MRI 901?
No, he said it, but Sean, yes. He's one of a few that said it to me, actually. Sean Tucker's already there at 1,000 yards. Schrader's going to get there, but just remember, the tweet is out. He's just getting started. And it's funny to see now, and we've talked about this before, his teammates quote his tweet. Others mention that he's just getting started, and he really is. And a very interesting award brought to my attention. I didn't think about this, and I should have because of the position that he plays, because we've been all over Heisman. He's leading the nation in rushing. And then everybody else wants to debate 44, 44, 44, 44. We've had that conversation going back and forth. If it's up to me, I'd rather get to the Heisman and wears 44, but there's also the Doak Walker Award for the best running back in the nation. Should we be pushing that out into the national media?
Of course, but everyone wants the Heisman.
Is he going to get that? Of course you want the Heisman. Kenneth Walker is second at 997, Bijan Robinson of Texas at 924, Lou Nichols, blah, 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 after that. But yeah, that is Sean Tucker, number 34. Make that famous. Listen, got a few more thoughts, and Brent actually wrote a little something about the number 44 that we're going to address in a little while, that's for sure. But 41-36, Sean Tucker over 1,000, couple of throwing touchdowns as well. Even Dino had addressed they're not the prettiest things, but he made them when they counted. Damian Alford, of course, with that great catch at the end to win it. Dino's quote was, yeah, just get up and act like you're a hero. He took a shot on that final play, too. So we'll get to that with Brian Higgins today on the phones. Accelerate Sports Complex phone lines will open up. Stephen Bailey joins us with 24/7 Sports. We got a kerfuffle today. Jordan Renan is going to join us because not just your Patriots won, but the Giants actually won. And the Bills didn't play. So I don't know what to make of all that. It's weird. It's weird to see wins from teams I like.
And how fitting is it that Sam Darnold gets benched at MetLife Stadium?
But then Matt Rhule turned around and said that he's still the quarterback going forward. But is he actually No, go ahead.
So why'd you bench your quarterback then? Your starting quarterback rarely gets benched unless there's a plan for him to be gone, or maybe they'll acquire someone, maybe a Deshaun Watson, because his name's been thrown around quite a bit.
Well, did they pull him off the field because of where it was? The vitriol of the fans?
Possibly, but it's not the Jets, so I don't know why that would even be a factor.
But he spent some time there prior to going to Carolina, and do you think that maybe it was to save him from some of that?
Possibly.
I mean, what else could it possibly be?
The fact that he didn't play well against your Giants. You guys had a lot of guys injured coming into that game.
It could be.
Did you expect the win?
No. No.
You can't ever expect to win.
Absolutely not. I was pleasantly surprised, especially with some of the injuries that they've had as well. But yeah, we got a lot to get to today. It's Exit 31, QSportsTalk.com. We get you in there in the chat in just a couple minutes. I saw some people saying hello already. But I just... Listen, we've got to settle in on this Syracuse game a little bit before we get to some thoughts with Brian Higgins. And I want to throw out some of the words that were thrown at me in QSportsTalk.com's chat, some stuff I got DM'd on Twitter, some of my very own thoughts when you look at the end of the second half, because there's still a pink elephant in the room. And yes, we're all happy for the kids, the team, Coach Babers, and as fans that they won this game. But we still saw a lot of issues with special teams. Kicking the ball is a problem right now. But the way everything was mismanaged at the end of the first half was, and I'll throw some of these words at you. Glue guy, you give me a little feedback.
Okay.
Haywire.
Yeah. Accurate.
If there's a random word that pops in your head, yell it out. And anybody in the chat that wants to throw this at me, let me know. Disaster.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I've texted you these words a couple times throughout this season, especially during this losing streak that they were going into.
A timeout and then a personnel mistake, so you have to waste another timeout, which, you know, they were 4-for-4 going for it on fourth down. I like the aggressiveness, but ultimately, in that situation, you end up settle for a field goal, and then what happened? Oh, my Lanta.
Yeah.
There's the special teams issues. A blunder. A comedy of errors, a miscommunication. You can't get out of your own way. It just keeps happening again and again and again and again. What was my quote? It was spewed back at me by CBW in the chat at QSportsTalk.com. I threw it somewhere. They are habitually disorganized in crucial times during the course of a game. And you see it over and over and over again. We're going to get to some of the responses to some of this, because I will say this. Dino Babers took ownership of it. I mean, he said it stops with me. You saw his quarterback take the blame for what happened, again, showing leadership, that it factor that Mike McAllister was talking about that I agree with. But Dino was like, no, it's me. Dino's done that in the past when Garrett has taken responsibility for things that have gone wrong with this team. But we got to win. So we're 4-4. That makes you that much closer to bowl eligibility. I couldn't imagine only still having 3 wins with 4 games left. And then, I mean, for me, I look at that Pitt game and that one scares me. You got Boston College, but they can also run the ball. But you got a better team overall. So now you win this game against Virginia Tech on the road, and suddenly maybe you have a little bit of confidence that maybe you didn't have before. Hey, we can actually win one of these games. They were close. Even the Liberty game was close this year. We won that one, then lost 3 straight by 3. So hopefully, and Dino said this too, maybe this is where you're going to see some of the change that I'm expecting to pay off. Any thought?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, you're talking about maybe this team has some confidence now. Hopefully everyone's done leaving for the transfer portal. You know, we've seen Taj leave. We've seen Tommy DeVito.
We did have one sneak in there over the weekend. We'll talk about that in a little while. Wasn't a main player, but...
But hopefully we're done with that.
Yeah, I want to stick a fork in that for sure. These are the guys we're going to war with for these last 4 games to try to at least win 2 more. It'd be nice to win 3 out of 4. Winning all 4 would be even better. Pitt does scare me. I believe 2 of them are nationally ranked as we stand here right now. I don't have the top 20 or 25 in front of me. But that being said, now I believe... They can win. Everything has to go right. You have to still overcome some inexplicable obstacles that just, they're head scratchers. And that's just, we're going to have to accept that that's this team.
When you say win, do you mean six games?
Get to the six win total for bowl eligibility. That's absolutely true. So, I mean, there's challenges, but I know you had a kumbaya moment. You know what? Things went haywire, as described at halftime. They turned around and they ended up winning the game. Yeah, they got it done when they had to. They made the plays when they were necessary. A couple of injuries of concern that we've got to get to as well. I wanted to put that out there. I don't know if you happen to see Garrett Williams didn't start the game, neither did Chris Blythe, but then Vettorello and Schrader were in walking boots. Garrett Schrader says that he's fine. That makes me a little bit nervous. So we've got to get to all that. Our first couple, go ahead.
No, I was going to say a very scary with him being your quarterback and obviously without Tommy DeVito now. Is Jacobian Morgan going to be getting some more snaps during practice this week?
He's going to have to at least be prepared in case something happens. That is a concern because he's next on the depth chart. Listen, let's take our first break of Exit 31 here on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com. We've got two lined up back-to-back once again in the Accelerate Sports Complex phone lines. Brian Higgins will join us next, and then after that, our breakdown, our usual slot at about 2:30 with Stephen Bailey at 2. Our usual slot with Stephen Bailey at 24/7 Sports at 2:30. Coming up next.
This is Exit 31 with Rain and Spencer on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com.
Welcome back to Exit 31, QSportsTalk.com, ESPN Radio, as we now will discuss with the one and only Brian Higgins, Syracuse, Virginia Tech. And yeah, he said it. It's nice to be able to talk about a victory. I want to bring a couple things from the chat in before I get to a few of the questions I intended to ask you, Brian. Does Dino trust Andre Schmidt moving forward? But I think I want to amend that question to, does Andre Schmidt trust himself? I almost sense and feel like he has a little bit of the kicking yips, if that's a thing. What do you think, Brian?
Yes. I mean, you're going to send him. You're not going to replace him. I mean, like, he's your guy one way or another. So it's not like you're going to kicker two. I mean, Schmidt's going to be taking the mm-hmm. kicks barring injury. Yeah, I think so. I mean, maybe he sent him out for a 48-yarder 2 weeks ago. Obviously, it didn't go great. And then, I mean, whatever you want about hitting the upright from 19, that's just kind of randomness. But, I don't think so. But at the same time, now, if it's 4th and 2, are you more inclined to go for it on what would be like a 46-yard field goal? Yeah, it probably shifts the odds a few percentage points toward going for it in those situations. As for Andre, it's so hard to tell with kickers, isn't it? Like, it's a stereotype, but, I mean, you watch him on the sideline, I can't get a read for it. I mean, he looks the same now as he did 3 years ago when he never missed.
No, you're absolutely right. And to your point, they went for it 4 times and were successful 4 times, 4 for 4 on 4th down. I like to see that aggressiveness. That's a few of the issues that we have been questioning over the past few weeks and some of these types of decisions with Dino. Does he get a pass on criticism now because they won the game, or are some of these criticisms still valid, even though he has taken ownership? Should I back off him in my criticisms or just kind of let it go this week? What do you think?
Well, I mean, this could have very easily gone the other way, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, your quarterback takes one in the ribs and hits a 45-yarder to win the game is not an every week occurrence. I mean, the main thing that stands out this week, obviously, is the last, you know, whatever it was, 30 seconds of the first half. Like, that stuff like that just can't happen. And on both sides, I don't know why Justin Fuente called the timeout at one point. He bailed out Syracuse. It was as peculiar a final 30 seconds of a half that I can recall. And I don't know where you put it, if it's on the head coach or on wherever, of how you don't have 11 guys on the field to run a play coming out of a timeout. Now, it may not specifically be the head coach, right, that led to it happening that time, but the buck stops here, and that's just kind of what it is. So it's stuff like that you can't have at this point of the season.
We're talking to Brian Higgins here on Exit 31 at ESPN Radio, and of course at QSportsTalk.com. All sorts of questions coming at us in the chat. We'll try to address a few of them. I think I'm kind of going in some of the same places, but you had brought up Justin Fuente. That was inexplicable to call that timeout in that situation, but if you look at this from the Virginia Tech aspect, Brian, Athletic put an article out today, and some of the reporters and some of the questions that he's been facing, it's kind of funny how the narrative flipped. Because Syracuse won that game, suddenly a collapse and a stunning loss, I suppose, now has Justin Fuente in the hot seat, and they're saying it's the beginning of the end for him. It sounds like Syracuse, doesn't it?
And I think even more so. I mean, before the game last week, and Matt was talking about it, and Adam, right at the beginning of the broadcast, you know, they put up his picture or video, whatever is up on the video board, you know, whatever it was, 45 minutes before the game, and the whole place boos. Like, the tide has turned on him in Blacksburg. And, you know, resources and whatever, maybe they have an easier way of getting out of these contracts, should it come to it. But I would say whatever the level of hot seat is between the two, it is significantly hotter on Justin right now.
So CBW in our Q Sports Talk chat is asking, is the offense better, or is it better because Schrader can run and make plays on his own?
I think the answer to that is, what's the difference? Yes, the offense is better, but your offense is better when you have, you know, guys that are in positions to make plays. And Schrader's a guy that can make plays. Tucker's a guy that can make plays. Before, like, no offense on Tommy, but he could not do the things with his legs that Garrett can do. And for whatever reason, this year's team was not set up to just wing the ball around. So you go the guy that can get it done by himself and run people over and run around them. And now that we've seen it on the field, it's a no-brainer that it's Garrett Schrader. I'd say the one thing I'd say in defense of the coaching staff of why didn't you end up on this from the beginning is, you know, obviously they're out there every minute of every practice, but I was out there enough in August, and you watch practice and you think Tommy's the guy, but it's because you don't get to see what Garrett could do during the game. And that's the unquantifiable thing that now that we've seen it on the field, it appears obvious from the beginning, but it's one of those things that's only obvious in hindsight.
I hosted post game afterwards the other day, Brian, and I had pointed out Trevor Pena. You saw the 62-yard touchdown catch. You saw the 51-yard kick return, which was essential. I gave him a chance to score that touchdown to then score the second touchdown within those few minutes to ultimately win this game. He's a playmaker. Why aren't you seeing him used in some different ways a little bit more often now? Clearly, there's a little something special there. We'll start with that, and then I've got a follow-up.
I think, Rain, my best guess is we are going forward.
Mm-hmm.
If you just listen, especially the way Dino talked about him today at his press conference this morning, that kind of led me to think that, because it'd been kind of some one-offs. He returned a kick for a touchdown last year, and you kind of forget about it just because of the way last year went. And, you know, he's been shifty. He's not the biggest guy, so you wonder what it's going to be like if he's out there playing wide receiver all the time. But if you do some things to get the ball in his hands, he knows how to work in space. So there are the type of offensive plays you can design on reverses and stuff where you almost set it up for him like it is a bit of a punt return. And I bet that is stuff that can be counters off what you're doing with Schrader and Tucker. That's a little misdirection that can work for you on a one-off here going forward.
And how about Rob Hanna with the sack? Was about a minute and 15 roughly left in the game. I mean, game-saving right there. There were three sacks overall, Brax Burmeister, but that's the one, obviously, that sticks out. What a huge play at that critical point in the game.
I say what I love about that play is they were backed up already. That was third and long,
mm-hmm.
So it wasn't great odds and you're going to get it. And you could not play prevent defense, but, you know, you go guard the sticks or something. And they sent the house. You know, they kind of got burnt playing the third and long protect the sticks a couple weeks ago in the Wake Forest game, I think it was. This time you send the house, which is kind of the DNA of the defense this year. I liked how you leaned into what you're good at and had it pay off at the right time.
Once again, talking to Brian Higgins here on Exit 31 at ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com. It was not the defensive or the defense overall that we expected to show up clearly. Specifically against the run, Virginia Tech put the ball on the ground. That does, of course, foreshadow Boston College's pretty decent running team. I'm not going to say to that level, but that's got to be a concern moving forward. A one-off bad performance or something we need to keep an eye on moving forward?
I'm concerned about the secondary right now just due to depth issues. I mean, who knows? I don't think Garrett Williams is significantly injured, but it was enough that he couldn't play last week. So I don't know what that says about this week. Then Adrian Cole left the game at some point. I mean, you have no depth left at cornerback. Not that that's necessarily the main part of your run defense. and your secondary, and you're playing five D backs because it's the 3-3-5. So you're stretched really thin. I think that's where you're hoping that Garrett Williams can come back. Whatever the deal was with Cole, it isn't too serious. You just need to get these guys back on the field because, you know, nobody's third string guys are what you want on the field at this point of the year. You put your third string guys on the field against the ACC, it's not going to go well for you more often than not. So the hope more than anything here is health, and that if it's not long term, if you can get through this game, you get the bye week. And if you somehow win this game, you got the bye week to be fresh for the last 3 weeks of the season. That's pretty good shape, all things considered.
What'd you think of Matt's call at the end? Come on, throwing in the Metallica reference with their whole, you know, Enter Sandman entrance down there, Virginia Tech. I mean, we haven't been there in a while. Alford makes the great catch. What a way to walk that off. That's what you call coming through in the clutch, isn't it?
Yeah, full circle, right? I mean, you start the game with it and you end the game with it, so... There you go. And I was in the, I said, I tweeted it out, and I was on the way home after our soccer game Saturday, and still had TK on the dial, and that just happened to be the song on when I turned on the car. So go figure. That's kind of how the whole day went.
I want to close things out with this, and Glue Guy had mentioned this to me a little bit earlier. We've obviously seen some players leaving the program this year, Tommy DeVito, for example, and we know of the others, but you're around the team. You have a little bit of access that we don't generally have. Is the overall general vibe of this team solid right now? Because I kind of portrayed it as maybe there was a little click in the locker room with the way the offense has changed and some of the things Dino has had to do based on personnel. There's a few guys that see the writing on the wall, but for the most part, this locker room and this team is together. Dino still has that ability to galvanize a team, right?
I think so. That's my sense of it. It certainly would have been tested to the max had they lost again this last week. I mean, I don't care how your medal is or your leadership or anything. If you drop four games in a row like that, that's hard. So I'd say this last week really helps kind of soothe all the wounds from the last few weeks. As far as the transfers, you know, we've all been watching sports a long time. Like, it stinks to see it just because it is not what we're used to, and you expect guys to be there 4 years and all that. And I guess we're just at the point we have to forget that because it's not what it is anymore. So best I can tell, talking to the guys, at worst they're playing poker real well, and at best they believe everything they're saying. That, yeah, while it stinks like a guy like DeVito leaves midseason, like, the guys on the team get it. Like, it's not like they feel like they're being stabbed in the back by a guy that's abandoned them or any of, you know, grandiose stuff like that. Like, they'd love to have him around and be the backup quarterback and all that, but it's, you got to look out for you. And talking to Chris Elmore about it last week, and who's more of a team guy over the year. I mean, he was playing left guard last season when he had no business doing it, other than that he accepted the call when asked. And he said he fully supports guys like that. So if he does, I suppose the rest of us should do.
You know what? I throw a little criticism out there, too. And I will say this. You know, a lot of people have said Dino hasn't really been accountable after games all season. Well, he was yesterday. He did. He took it all on himself. So we'll consider maybe the win, and that are some of these changes that we want to see over these last four remaining games, hopefully to get bowl eligible. Keep your fingers crossed, Brian. We're going to do the same. Thanks for the time, man.
All right, guys. Talk to you soon.
The one and only Brian Higgins. Man, and it's not just football. I love his call. You're a huge fan.
I am. Definitely a huge fan.
We're fangirling about you, Brian. He's actually got to get back to daddy duty. He was nice enough to take a break from being a dad to talk to us. It's Exit 31 ESPN Radio, QSportsTalk.com. We'll further this conversation along with Stephen Bailey of 24/7 Sports. His breakdown is next.
Exit 31.
We're going with the boy though. You know what I'm talking about? If I didn't pronounce it right, tap in with me and let me know how to do it the right way, big dog. Straight up.
This is Exit 31 with Rain and Spencer on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com.
As we do every Monday, we get a breakdown with Stephen Bailey at 24/7 Sports, talking Virginia Tech, Syracuse, quite obviously. And I don't know if it was a surprise win, but it was an exhilarating win. It was a fun game to watch. The end of the first half, as we know, was bonkers. But let's get to a couple of questions in the QSportsTalk.com chat right off the top. We've been throwing it out there. You know, everybody's talking about 44. We've been trying to push the narrative more towards, hey, Sean Tucker's leading the nation in rushing with 1,060 yards. and the Heisman is out there. And I don't know if Syracuse's record precludes him from that. But then there's that Doak Walker Award. Would there be consideration for that, Stephen?
Yeah. I mean, I think, I think Sean has certainly earned that with his play. The Heisman is going to be a tough ask unless Syracuse basically wins out to realistically get into that conversation. It's just so traditionally given to a team that's competing for a prestigious bowl. Best case, you know, Syracuse wins out and you go 9-4, and then, you know, I think there is some precedent for a team like that to have maybe a Heisman finalist. But, you know, I think other national awards, like the Doak Walker, I mean, you know, maybe more realistically, the rushing crown, could he end up being the nation's leader in rushing yards at the end of the year? I definitely think so. So there's a lot for him to play for, and I think whether it's an All-America list or winning or being a finalist for a prestigious award, Sean Tucker is going to be filling up the mantle in about a month.
So that being said, let's get to the injuries. Blyche didn't play. Garrett Williams didn't play. What are we looking at with them moving forward? Then there's also the walking boot that we saw Vettorello and Schrader in after the game. Schrader says he's fine. That's just a precaution. But that leads to the follow-up from QSportsTalk.com in the chat. So I know the depth chart says Jacoby and Morgan, but others are asking if Lampson is a possibility at any point in this any point this season over the remaining four games if something goes wrong, obviously, with Garrett Schrader, which, fingers crossed, it doesn't.
I would be really surprised if we saw Justin Lampson, as the primary backup for Garrett Schrader. I mean, is there a world, Schrader suffers a season-ending injury, it's not working with Jacoby, and Justin can run a little bit, you know, maybe that gets explored, like two or three dominoes down the line? Yeah, but... Dino always says you can really only prepare two quarterbacks with practice reps. Obviously, that was Garrett and Tommy. Now it's Garrett and Jacobian. It's just, getting a third quarterback ready, especially a true freshman. I can't imagine that's on the radar for the Orange offense right now. But the injuries in the offensive line do have to, make sure these fans and the team a little bit worried about protecting Garrett. Like you said, Tisdale, Blyche, and now Carlos Vettorello, all dealing with injuries. Dino did not have a substantial update today. You know, judging by the fact that Tisdale didn't travel, I would be surprised if he was back. And then maybe Blyche or Vettorello can come back, but I think you're probably looking at least Kalen Ellis playing for you against Boston College, and he's done fairly well. And if you need to, it'll be Josh Lowell again. Offensive line is definitely the most concerning area injury-wise. Garrett Williams, I know, was close to being able to play against Virginia Tech, so if you can get him back for Boston College, I think that goes a long way toward allowing defensive coordinator Tony White to be aggressive in the box, if you can trust Garrett out there on an island like they so often do.
So, Steven, we were talking about quarterbacks just a little while ago, and C. Rogers, 1220 in our Q Sports Talk chat, was asking about, do you think Syracuse needs to alter the way they recruit quarterbacks, not go after just pocket passers, but maybe playmakers, especially with Garrett Schrader's success using his legs?
Well, I mean, the last two quarterbacks they've signed have been dual-threat guys. I mean, Justin Lampson last year and then Garrett Schrader, so... I think this pivot or the potential to pivot has been kind of in the works for this program. Even dating back to last year, stocking up on offensive linemen and adding mobility at the quarterback position. Dino prepared himself to be able to make that call, make that switch this year. And I think you've got to recruit mobile quarterbacks. We were talking off air. I mean, just how good Garrett Schrader has been running under pressure. He's right up there with Malik Willis. I think the Western Michigan quarterback is essentially the most productive runners while under pressure, according to PFF this year. So, yeah, I mean, I think they got to do it, and maybe things change in the future where you can get away with a pocket passer. But it certainly, cannot be your only course of action, which is really how Dino handled it his first 4 years here.
So I said during post game that they're habitually disorganized in crucial situations, and I got a few people chuckling at that. But it pretty much explains it in shorter terms, what so many different adjectives can describe what happened at the end of the first half, and you can't sweep it under the rug and kumbaya all that with the fact that they ended up winning the game. There's still some glaring issues. The defense that showed up is not what we expected, especially against the run. We talked about this a little bit earlier today on Exit 31 here on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com. But it's specifically against the run, but overall it's got to be a little bit of a concern moving forward. So break down what you saw defensively from Syracuse.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think oftentimes this is a bend but don't break kind of defense, and that requires you to get stuff in the zone, and it requires you to make big plays. And that's kind of, you know, it's part of the methodology defensively, right? If we force the other team to run a lot of plays, maybe give some underneath stuff, there's more opportunities for the big turnover, for the game-changing play. And this just felt like a time where, you know, Syracuse just couldn't cash in. You know, they weren't able to come up with the big play. They weren't able to get off the field in the red zone. Obviously, look, they got the stop at the end. They got the one they needed, and there's a lot to be said for that.
Yes.
But, you know, they couldn't quite follow through. I'm going to have to go back and rewatch to see schematically what in the run game didn't go right. But the way Dino talked today, it sounded like certainly some of it was correctable, and just, you know, maybe coming up, maybe anticipating what Virginia Tech was going to do a little bit earlier in the game and adjusting the scheme for it.
It was crazy to see Malachi Thomas was 11 carries heading into the game, 22 for 151 with three touchdowns. There might have been the problem right there. Stop that guy. Stephen Bailey is with us at 24/7 Sports. It's his breakdown, Exit 31, ESPN Radio, and QSportsTalk.com. All right, let's talk Garrett Schrader, man. Five touchdowns, 400 yards of total offense, 236 passing, two touchdowns in the air, three on the ground, ran for 174. I mean, he's also on pace to be the second 1,000-yard rusher this year. It's Mike McAllister, who you know well, said it's the it factor, and I think that there's something to that. He's just got a confidence and a swagger and an ability to make plays, and especially in clutch situations. I mean, I don't know what else we can say about him. And I think we talked about this off the air, too. You're not necessarily going to even be in position to win some of these games, because I think, listen, if he didn't have the ability to run and use his legs, if we had the quarterback that is no longer here and no longer shall be named, he's on his back getting sacked a lot more often. And we're not having some of these discussions.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's certainly possible, especially now that the offensive linemen are really dinged up. You know, like the Virginia Tech game, I think, is the shining example of that, where you are getting some early pressures. And you know, yeah, as opposed to, I guess, maybe some coverage pressures that you saw earlier this year. But, I mean, I think it's mobility. Like, I think we're all still learning a little bit about Garrett. I think passing-wise, he's got a lot to improve on. Mm-hmm. But he's not only is he mobile, but he is like as willing to run as any quarterback who has ever come through here, including Eric Dungy. I mean, if he sees space, he is pulling it immediately. You know, a lot of the stuff that he does is set up by Sean Tucker. He said that, and defenses are essentially still treating Sean Tucker as the 1A in that backfield, scheming to stop him. But I mean, it's size, it's speed, and it's a willingness to want to run the ball. So, yeah, I mean, I just think it's a good fit. I think this is what Garrett wanted when he left Mississippi State. I think this is what we've learned that Syracuse kind of needed, given its offensive line limitations and scheme issues and wide receiver issues that they've gone through. So, yeah, I mean, it's matching up, I think, as nicely as Dino Babers could have hoped.
Steven, so the game ends, they win. You're writing your recap. You're getting everything together. I've asked you a bunch of questions. Matt's our glue guy's asked you a couple of questions here, and we've talked about a lot of this game. But what didn't we ask you? I want to give you the open-ended. What are some other observations that we need to know about?
Well, you know, I think Dino going for it on fourth down a little more was noteworthy. You know, the question is that based on past results? Is that based on maybe embracing, I don't even want to call it aggressive. I mean, just, you know, statistically or an analytically oriented mindset where, you know, in the open field, you should expect to pick up 4th and 1, 4th and 2, and you couple those decisions with a field goal PAT unit that is just absolutely imploding. I mean, after missing, 40-plus yarders in the fourth quarter the last two games, Andre Schmidt puts a 19-yarder off the upright, and they have an unblocked rusher on an extra point that gets returned for a two-point conversion. I mean, if you're Dino Babers and you're in more close games, which, good grief, the last 5 weeks, like, you're going to be in close games. Can you trust those guys to send them out? Or is that going to affect how you call plays on third down? Are you anticipating going for it more on fourth down? I think that limitation, the balance of it being a limitation with special teams, but also a reason to be more aggressive on offense, could make for some interesting moments in the fourth quarters of the last four games of the year.
So special teams is definitely an issue, especially the kicking game. If we want to look at Andre Schmidt, we were posed the question, and I asked this of Brian Higgins a little bit earlier, and it kind of came out of the QSportsTalk.com chat, but somebody said, does Dino trust Schmidt moving forward? Well, you kind of alluded to that. I mean, you saw him being a little bit more aggressive and going for it. Maybe that is a result of that, because I don't know if the question is so much, does Dino trust him? He's an award-winning kicker. It's, does he trust himself? And I suggested maybe it's the kicking yips, or there's something going on with him mentally where he's a little bit scared out there, sitting there saying, instead of going, I'm going to make this, he's maybe saying in his head, don't miss this. And that's a big problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's, only Andre can answer that.
Right.
Because he's having some issues, and the people around him are having problems. It is not Andre Schmidt's fault that, he kicked that laces-in ball
true
at the end against Wake Forest. That's on the holder, probably. And it's not his fault that extra point was blocked. I mean, it looked like Kingsley Jonathan took the outside guy instead of the inside guy. I don't know if Virginia Tech did some kind of alignment thing, or maybe there's a slightly better answer than that. But, I mean, this is just failed execution. And then you've got all these things failing around you, and now you miss, what should be a 100%er for, the guy who was deemed the best kicker in football the last 3 years. It's just, there's not much to lean on there. And I can imagine, it being problematic to build confidence. There's just so many different issues that, I certainly wouldn't blame Dino for not wanting to send out his field goal unit on the 4th and 4 or less.
We got about a minute left. Stephen Bailey, 24/7 Sports, here with us, Exit 31, ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com. I swear we talked about this on Friday, and I remember we had this conversation of sorts throughout the course of last week, but you would hate to see special teams, the kicking game, become an issue in determining the outcome for Syracuse, and yet here it is again. And punting, on the flip side of that, is another issue with some of the field position that we left Virginia Tech with. That's just gotta stop, and we just hope that we never see any of that nonsense at halftime, right before halftime, ever again. But close us out with that.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what I take away. You look at that, there were multiple things that went wrong right before halftime. Obviously, you're burning that timeout. Obviously, there's blame for the players and the coaches. I want to know if Dino considered just taking the penalty so you could still run the ball. I don't know if it would be a delay of game or a 12-man call, so 5 yards or, 10 yards. Then, I don't know if you guys saw this on TV, it looked like Garrett Schrader killed the next play call after the incompletion to Alford, and he tried to sneak it himself. So when Dino was talking about, kind of putting his foot down and that being the proverbial line in if that game was a movie, it's a bizarre comparison he made post-game. So you've got a quarterback potentially trying to, take matters into his own hands, and then you've got the missed field goal on top of it. So just awful preparation, and they've got to clean it up, and they should have had it cleaned up, 2 weeks ago.
He basically said it's time to listen to Dad, and I'm Dad. We'll take a break right there. Stephen Bailey, 24/7 Sports with the breakdown. He'll be back with us again on Friday at 2:30. Don't forget, You're Killing Me Smalls is up next. ESPN Radio, QSportsTalk.com, and you're listening to Exit 31.
You're Killing Me Smalls. This is Exit 31. Here is Rain and WKTV Sports Director Spencer Davidson on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com.
You're Killing Me Smalls.
Yeah, so BC, then Louisville, NC State, who's dropped out of the poll, and Pitt's the only one still ranked out of the four remaining. Mario Sacco, I just saw he texted me a little bit earlier. He'll be on with us Wednesday, Sportscaster Wednesday, about 2:15. He's like, I got you, man. I got you. Didn't have the poll in front of me. It was about 40 minutes ago as we continue on your Exit 31, QSportsTalk.com. The chat's fantastic today, by the way. You know, all the criticisms aside, and you do have to look at some of the issues with the team, but you even the record out at 4-4, and you got to win. And now just taking away the sports broadcaster aspect of my job, just as a lifelong fan of the team, I was just so happy to see the win. It was so nice. It felt good to just go, yeah, all right, you got to win. I don't care how you got there, but when the clock hit those final zeros, it was a W. And then I'm sitting there going, well, and I've got to host postgame now, so this is going to be a lot more enjoyable than if they lost again.
For the fourth time in a row.
And especially if clearly there were some issues. You saw what happened at the end of the first half. If that had to be the narrative because they lost. Because if they did, that would have been. Ay, ay, ay. And then all of the other issues that we've lightheartedly discussed today, it would have been even more serious. So you get yourself a little bit of a reprieve for that. You take accountability and you know what? You get a little bit of respect back from fans and, you know, those on the fringe, the casual fans out there that are just absorbing some of it. Some follow it a little bit more obsessively than others, and I think we have to balance that out. Is that a fair statement?
No, that's totally fair. But I have to ask, is it more enjoyable doing a post game after a win or a loss?
It depends.
Because if it's a loss, everyone else, you know, gets to send you some talking points as well. And it's kind of a vent session.
The way they spit fire.
They do.
Yeah. You get, there's more swearing. More mean-spirited swearing and cussing and yelling. Listen, let's take a quick second here, though. Did you realize, let's just jump over to the NFL. Obviously, the Bills were off. The Giants actually won. We're going to be talking about that in hour number two with Jordan Renan. The Jets got demolished by glue guys. Patriots, wow. And then Bill Belichick was smiling and laughing and rubbing it in the Jets' faces. You enjoyed that?
Yeah, because it's a rare sight to see.
Spencer Davidson is not here today. We assume it's because he didn't want to face the music because of that. He's out today and tomorrow. But your former quarterback, Tom Brady, now has 600 touchdowns. And this isn't a sports festivus airing of the grievances making me roll my eyes in a, oh my God, what happened there? It's more, wow. He has 600 passing touchdowns, glue guy. That's
the first ever to do it.
Ever. Now, records are made to be broken, okay? There's some that have stood the test of time. Pick a sport, pick a record that are out there. You don't know if you're ever going to see them broken. The one that always comes to mind is the 56-game hitting streak with Joe DiMaggio. Seems untouchable, but he got there. Maybe someday somebody will. And that being said, if you're going to break that, you got to play a long time.
That's correct.
Really long time. He's in year 22. He also has intentions of playing till 50. I can tell you this. He's definitely coming back next year, and you're looking at a Super Bowl contending quarterback. Why the hell would he walk away?
No, without a doubt. And look, I feel like this Buccaneers team has been sleepwalking all season.
Yeah.
Have you seen a dominant performance from them? They hung on to win against Dallas.
They're going through the motions, and he's just stacking numbers.
That's correct.
First of all, he's doing, his numbers are those of no other 44-year-old ever in the history of the league. But number, he's gonna have 625 of them by the end of this season. I see no reason he doesn't throw for plenty more this year alone.
You know who is killing me, though?
Does he put this record out of reach?
Yes, totally. I don't think anyone's going to be able to reach that ever.
You know, it's not going to be any of our lifetimes. It's going to have to be another Tom Brady, I guess. Maybe it's his kid. I don't know.
Maybe Joe Burrow eventually reaches that.
Well, that's another one. Is he legit? It's amazing what he has done in coming back from the knee injury and then getting clobbered in the neck. You said that, too. He's a damn good football player. What was the secret? Getting his receiver, right?
Getting Jamar Chase, man. He's looked really, really good in that offense. They look comfortable together.
Is he going to win? He's going to win Rookie of the Year.
Kind of has to, doesn't he, at this point?
Is he going to play himself in the MVP conversation if these numbers keep stacking up for him?
As of right now, how can you argue?
Cincinnati, the Bengals, are a favorite to win their division right now. I think there's a ways to go to be contending.
And the AFC North is good.
It is good. I mean, to contend for the Super Bowl, I don't think they're quite there yet. But
if you have a good quarterback, anything's possible.
Ooh, there's a lot to build on. How about those Cincinnati Bengals? Well, all right. the clock, man. Give me a second to close you out, buddy.
You're killing me, Smalls.
And we'll move on. The kerfuffle is next, which is actually pretty funny because many in the chat at QSportsTalk.com were describing the end of the first half of the Syracuse game that way, using our word. Very nice. Then Jordan Renan is promised, and then we'll get to sound check. Exit 31, ESPN Radio.
Who's got Twitter beef? Bulletin board material. We've got another Donnybrook, an athletic brouhaha. Let's go toe-to-toe. It's the Exit 31 kerfuffle.
A classic conundrum.
This is Exit 31. Here is Rain and WKTV sports director Spencer Davidson on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com.
Spencer, got anything to... he's not here today. Spencer is out today and tomorrow. Glue Guy in Rain with you, hour number two, exit 31. I'm not saying there's a kerfuffle necessarily in the chat at QSportsTalk.com, but it is a spirited conversation. It's smarmy and snarky. It's fun. Get in there if you want. Subscribe, of course. You can do that for free with your Amazon Prime account. Just pass Ned along. You're about to say something to me, Glue Guy.
I love Mondays after a game day.
I sure do. You know what? Loss or win, it's always good. We're discussing the team. Oh, 44 is back in there as a talking point, too. Doak Walker Award, Heisman. That's where we're going with that, with Sean Tucker. Needless to say, we've got Jordan Renan to talk some Giants with us. We've got Dino Babers post-game in the press conference a little bit earlier today. We'll get to some of that in soundcheck in a few minutes. But we had this conversation with the chat a little bit. Let's bring it on the air. So the 600th touchdown thrown to Mike Evans by Tom Brady for Tampa. Well, they went and they got the ball back because Mike Evans gave it to somebody in the crowd. And he was like, ooh, I got rid of that. Did you see the video of him on the sidelines?
I did.
He's like, oh, my bad. I didn't realize. He didn't know. I don't think he knew. Or if he knew, he forgot. And in the moment, the excitement of the moment, he just gave it to somebody. So they go retrieve this. And the guy was promised in a proposed trade here for the ball that he would get a different game ball, a $1,000 gift card to the team store, and the promise of a helmet, a couple of jerseys, and, quote, something nice in return. That was per Tom Brady. So Tom's gonna hook that guy up. I've heard people go, you know, you got to do better than that. That's not enough considering the historical significance of that ball and probably the personal significance to Tom Brady. Could they do better? I mean, these teams are, they're owned by billionaires.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd start the bidding at least $1 million, right?
Season tickets?
Because I can go on eBay right now and probably sell that game ball for at least a good million.
You know, at first when you said a million, I'm like, whoa. And then I'm like, no, wait a minute. I just said these teams are owned by billionaires.
Correct.
Tom makes some money.
What's a million?
How bad do you want this ball? At least haggle and negotiate, barter a little bit, right?
Because how often do you see an autographed trading card going for billions of dollars? I'm pretty sure number 600 will get more than at least a million.
Tickets for life, according to Ink Metal in the QSportsTalk.com chat. I'm saying at least season tickets. Hey, at least get me to the rest of the games this year or maybe next year, something like that. NFC Championship tickets, that's another one. I won't say the screen name on the air. That's our guy Jeff in the chat. Yeah, something like that. Memorabilia from the Super Bowl. Kevin from Liverpool agrees with you with being $1 million. So just a few things we wanted to put out there. But let's kerfuffle a little bit more. Gerrit Cole and Brett Gardner, it's come out and reported over the weekend, had a kerfuffle. Apparently, at some point during the season, when the spider tack was taken away and they started policing the sticky stuff, the Gardy party was trying to lighten the load or lighten the mood a little bit in the locker room. And he was teasing Garrett about that a little bit. All of these guys that are focused on spin rate and are throwing 98, 99 miles an hour, that extra tack on the ball is allowing them to spin it more and throw it harder. And it clearly affected Gerrit Cole a little bit, and he had to adjust. And he didn't take too kindly when the Gardy party was, I don't know, mocking him, but just having a little fun at his expense. And apparently Gerrit got in his face. So now there's all sorts of stuff. If you get in the cesspool of Twitter and social media about the Yankees and going over their locker room issues. Of course, old school guys are going, oh, what about the Bronx Zoo in the 70s? They hated each other. Reggie Jackson fought with Billy Martin in the dugout in Boston and blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, what's the deal? I'm kind of on Brett Gardner's side of this.
Why?
Guys are going to be dudes. You're gonna bust them a little bit. And that was the intention. But Gerrit Cole went over the top with it and got in his face.
Yeah, but Gerrit Cole's a perfectionist.
So?
And the man's at work. and you're over there poking fun at him?
Yeah, but, I mean, Guardy's the wily veteran on the club. You know, he's the last one. Hey, here's I'll just going to play devil's advocate, and I saw some people say this. He's the last one that's on the Yankees that won a World Series. He understands what it's like to be a Yankee long-term and how a clubhouse should be, and he keep guys loose. I didn't think he said anything that crossed the line. It was more the issue in general. And because Garrett was the poster child for it, I think he was trying to make him laugh, and Garrett took exception.
But Gardner wasn't really performing either this year. So you're over here cracking jokes? Come on, man.
All right, well,
time and place.
QSportsTalk.com. You can let us know in the chat if you're with us here. Exit 31 ESPN Radio. It is the kerfuffle. You can let us know how much Tom Brady's 600th touchdown is worth, what you think the trade should have been to make it even. Did you realize, and stick with baseball with me for a second, glue guy, Atlanta, 88 wins in the regular season, takes on Houston in the World Series, but none of the 100-win teams are in. The Dodgers, the Giants, and Tampa didn't make it. Postseason baseball is amazing. Just get there. Oh, by the way, both teams in the World Series lost for the first time in Major League Baseball history in the League Championship Series next year or last year. You've never seen that before.
How awesome is that?
That's kind of neat.
I think that makes playoff baseball very interesting, and it kind of gives them the credence. You never know who's going to win.
All right, we'll kerfuffle a little bit more real quick. I was part of this. I started this in the post game. Maybe, and some have suggested, sometimes a little too critical of Dino. I've got to give him a pass based on development of players not being able to get these 4- and 5-star recruits. And, hey, we got a 4-and-4 team because I said it. I'll quote myself. They're habitually disorganized in crucial situations, even with the win. I still have to stand by that statement. You can agree or disagree in the chat. And let me give you one more. Is that cool with you, glue guy?
Sure.
Number 44 is Jim Brown's decision. Unless it's Floyd Little's grandson. And this is per Rob Conrad. I told you when we first got started on Exit 31 today that Brent Axe, our radio brother on the block, 4 o'clock today, of course, and every day, he spoke with Rob Conrad, who was the last to wear 44, and this is part of the narrative. Yes, we're pushing Sean Tucker for the Heisman. Yep, we're putting the Doak Walker Award, best running back, out there for him. He definitely should be winning that if he keeps up what he's doing. In my opinion, I think he's earned it.
I mean, he's leading the nation in yards, so yeah, I think it's warranted.
So there you go. And you know what? It's not a blue blood program. I think that's to his advantage. Look at what he's doing with less than ideal circumstances as compared necessarily to others. So we'll put that out there. But there you go. I mean, other than that, Rob Conrad said, I defer to Jim Brown. So if it's not Floyd Little's grandson, then we defer to Jim Brown on the decision. Otherwise, since name, image, likeness money is already out there and on the table for the 34 with Sean Tucker, it's probably off the table and maybe we could just focus on Sean Tucker winning those awards. Oh, man, there is gasoline, a match, and let's fire that conversation up.
You really just started that, didn't you?
This has been an ongoing conversation.
Since basically week one, right?
You can't get rid of it. I've mocked it a little bit. I'm much more concerned whether or not Sean Tucker wins the Heisman or gets the Doak Walker Award at this point, as opposed to if he wears 44 or not. You know what I mean? I'm going to be happy for him and Syracuse as a program in general. But that's what Rob Conrad said. He ultimately defers to Jim Brown on this issue or Floyd Little's grandson. If he wants to wear it, he's eligible in a couple of years to choose to play football and come to Syracuse University. Very interesting. Or use it as a recruiting tool. Maybe if you have one of those all-time 5-star running backs that makes that decision, maybe that's a reason to pull it down from the rafters. These are all... I don't know. I mean,
it's very interesting, but I feel like it'd be a slap in the face to Sean Tucker.
Is the 44
you're out there using it as a recruiting tool rather than giving it to the guy who's leading the nation in rushing yards?
It's cool and all, but I'm on the side of this where I just think him winning the Heisman or the Doak Walker Award overall will lead more to the team's success than the number that he's wearing on his jersey. I'm cool with it. I'm going to tell you something. The number 44 as a Syracuse fan is associated with Syracuse athletics. It even makes me think basketball. Derek Coleman, for
That's
example.
Fair.
It just does. So, I don't know. The performance on the field is what matters to me more than the jersey number.
And if we keep Sean Tucker in 34, maybe one day that can be retired.
That, yeah, I mean, the player makes the number. The player makes the number. You remember the number on a really good player's jersey. Oh, this is going to be fun. We'll get back in this chat at QSportsTalk.com as we've given you our kerfuffle for the day. Exit 31 on ESPN Radio with Jordan Renan next. Hey, it's the home of the New York Giants. So ESPN NFL Nation New York Giants reporter joins us next.
This is Exit 31 with Rain and WKTV Sports Director Spencer Davidson on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com. Listen to this. Mic check. Okay? Good. Here's your sports sound check.
So welcome to live radio where Jordan Renan, ESPN's NFL Nation New York Giants reporter. So they're moving around different conference calls, you know, some of his basic responsibilities for his job. So he's been blowing up my phone over the last couple of minutes. We're moving him about 10, 12 minutes away. So just after 3:30, we'll talk to him for the Giants fans. This is their radio home. Yes, ESPN Radio all across Central New York, Syracuse and Utica. So we're going to give you a sound check after that. Instead, we'll do it right now. Does that work for you?
Sounds like we're calling an audible.
We're calling an audible. We're making adjustments on the fly. So as promised, let's get to a couple of pieces of audio from Dino Babers. I'm just going to go with the post game, that immediate reaction to that win. That's the Dino I want to hear from right now. Very interesting, first of all, to hear about the winning play and what he said immediately thereafter. We weren't able to give you an actual press conference. They didn't have one. But he spoke for about 5 minutes after the game with the voice of the Orange, Matt Park. So this is what Dino said in regards to that winning play, that touchdown pass where Garrett Schrader got rocked.
I was teasing Dan inside. I'm like, did you catch it the first time, the second time, or the third time? It just seemed like it was in his hands for a long time. But to see him make that play, and Garrett never saw the play. Go back and check the tape. Garrett's on his back. He never saw the play. He could barely breathe when I got to him, and he's like, I said, stop making all that Dalgo noise and went for a touchdown. Get up and act like you're a hero. You know, it was a heck of a throw, and it was a heck of a catch, and I'm excited for Damien because he's a freshman. There's big things for him down the road.
Yeah, you can't teach 6'6". You just can't. I'm excited, too.
So you can't teach that? Are you sure?
I'm excited. You know, Rhonda Gadsden, you've heard with the NFL pedigree of his father, that's another one, 6'5". You know, receivers like that. I said it during postgame. He can high point the ball. Just guys, he can throw it out there. When you have a quarterback who's known more for his legs and not quite as accurate and his passing ability isn't on par, you need receivers like that, big, gangly, athletic receivers that can get the ball. You can sort of throw them open. Well, I think we all know this. But as far as Garrett Schrader's throwing, Dino Babers said this in the postgame. Listen, he's going to get better.
He throws okay, you guys. He throws okay. It's not the prettiest thing, but it'll get better. You know what I mean? It'll get better. And it may not change this year, but you've got two more years for it to change. So he'll get better. But he did okay.
And they are habitually disorganized in crucial situations. Why did Dino decide to kick before the half? Here's his answer.
It had to do with the score. And watch this. It had to do with the score. Now watch this. Who got the ball first in the second half?
You guys.
And you know what we did with it? Okay. So the way I looked at it is you got to be careful with this. Because I really felt that after we came out in the second half that we were gonna get something. I really might be wrong. I mean, we could fumble the ball, you know. But I really felt we were going to get something. And I just didn't want to. We took it. I want to say 3 legitimate shots at that thing. And I'm like, eh. And then we had a really good play called, and something happened. It was happening. And I'm like, okay, let's kick, and we'll take this. We'll get this kick, and then we'll go back. Now, you told me that we were going to hit an upright. I'd have went for it on 4th and 1. But if you looked, we got the playoff on 4th and 1 where they called timeout, and we actually didn't make it. But they called timeout, so the play didn't count. It's a yard, but it's tough sled, man. Especially when they know, watch this, most likely we're not going to throw a pass. Most likely we're going to run it. It's a tough deal.
So it's supposed to be Courtney Jackson apparently didn't realize he was supposed to be on the field, is my understanding from all of this. So that leads to the timeout, and then it goes all haywire, and then ultimately you get the chance to make the kick that you ended up missing. because for some unknown reason, Fuente decided to give Syracuse a gift and Virginia Tech calls a timeout, which I think almost as bad as that situation was at the end of the first half, made it not as bad as it could have been. It could have actually been
a lot worse,
even worse in theory. Like, you have to think about that. The mismanagement at the end of the half in that whole scenario could have, in theory, been worse. Then again, you get the gift of the timeout to then take the kick because you didn't get the personnel on the field to run the actual initial play, but then he missed it. Okay, pretty much just it sucked all around. So you were given a gift and it still just didn't work out. It's like, you got a second chance and the second chance failed too. Oh my goodness. They won the game though, right?
That's correct. At the end of the day, the team won. And I think as MRI 901 said, embarrassment to explain all of that.
It's oh my goodness. I went through it earlier. I mean, it's a comedy error. It was a blunder. It's inexplicable. It was haywire. That was what it was described like. After that, they go in, it's halftime. The whole scenario in the locker room, it got haywire. And that's why Dino had said a kumbaya moment where he had to basically, I'm paraphrasing, but he ultimately had to say, I'm the coach, I'm dad, you're my kids, listen to me right now, let's stay together, let's focus, let's get this right. I'm going to tell you what to do and you're going to listen. And that's what needs to happen from here on out, right?
And that's the bottom line because Stone Cold said so.
And that's the bottom line because Dino Babers said, Kumbaya, La Familia, and Ohana. And they ended up winning the game. So I'll be happy with that. Here's what he said in addressing that the whole whatever that was. That was insane. Personal confusion needs to stop. It's on me. Here's Dino.
That's not good. No, that needs to stop today. Yeah, that's not good. That wasn't so much to the players. I'm responsible for everything, so it's on me. My hands are on it.
Would some of the criticism of coaching decisions, let's just say, not have been as severe? Maybe there wouldn't have been as many criticisms if he said that 4 games ago.
Yeah, you're talking about being accountable.
He didn't use the right words where it appeared he was taking direct responsibility. It felt like there was a finger pointing outward and blame, 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 blame. And that's why he's being second-guessed. Even worse than, okay, Syracuse fans, all sports fans, we're going to second-guess. We're going to Monday morning quarterback.
That's correct.
But it's even worse with this situation. Being accountable will help a little bit in the eyes of some, I'm sure.
With all these blunders, CBW makes a great point. He goes, you'd swear it was Dino's first year as a head coach, and after we played the clip about being accountable, he goes, great, it's on Dino. So what's going to change?
Well, that's the thing. Justin Lustig is coming back to help us with special teams managing the clock and things like... No? No?
No.
It's kind of funny how much you have heard his name. And you heard it before, but boy, you're hearing a lot more now. Perhaps somebody to help out with that facet of the game is important. You know, something as simple as Stephen Bailey brought it up again, spin the laces when Andre Schmidt is kicking.
And again, it's on the holder.
Right? Even he said it's not entirely Schmidt's fault. However, I also am worried about his psyche. If he's in his own head a little bit. I described it, golfers know the term, the yips. So there you go. That could have a little bit to do with it. And of course, we have Syracuse basketball as we move on here. Exit 31 ESPN Radio, QSportsTalk.com. This is our sound check today as we await a conversation with Jordan Renan, ESPN's NFL Nation reporter for the New York Giants. Well, we got a little exhibition basketball on Wednesday against Pace. Then there's a game, what is it, November 1st or 2nd against Lemoyne. We got a couple to look forward to sooner than you think. The regular season starts, and it's Cuse basketball. We've heard about 3 great perimeter shooters. The centers are light years ahead of where they were, specifically Anselm and Jesse Edwards. We saw media day. We had the tip-off event. We saw Benny Williams win the slam dunk portion of it. Is Jimmy going to start over Benny and blah, blah, blah. It's all out there. I can't wait to start crabbing and getting smarmy and snarky about Syracuse basketball and second guessing Jim's decisions and talking about nepotism and Jim can't recruit because somebody has a bad game. You know we're looking forward to all this, right?
Yeah, I know you definitely are. That's for sure.
All right, let's get to a little bit of sound from Jim Boeheim. Jim Boeheim, talking about Benny Williams and expectations for a five-star recruit like him. Are they out of whack?
I don't worry about what people's expectations are. They're, you know, that's, they have never seen him play, so they have no idea what he can do or can't do, and they're making projections based on, I'm not even sure what. Nothing really, because what you do in high school is, you know, is what you do in high school. It's got nothing to do with college, but Benny's a good player, and he'll help us.
You remember when I Luke judged Aaron Voigt?
That's correct, yes.
I just Jim Babers, Dino Boeheim right there. Oops. there's only one Carmelo Anthony. Let's see what the kid can do. You know what? If he wins a national champion, if Syracuse wins the national championship at the end of this,
no one's going to complain.
Then you go, you remember at the beginning of the year when I was saying this about Benny Williams, and then if that's you, you can be right. But he's making some good progress so far. They like what they've seen. Listen, the kid's a good basketball player, all right? Let's just see what happens.
Benny's playing very well, but he'll figure it out. And he'll be really good next year, but he's making good progress this year. It's helped him to have Cole and Jimmy, two guys that are veteran guys to play against, play with. The veteran guards have helped him.
There was also a couple of questions about when Jim's retiring. Like, are you going to retire and announce it at the beginning of the season like Coach K, or what are you going to do? He's told the recruits from next year that he's going to be here next year. That's going to happen. His two sons, the plan is for them not to be on the team next year. So you see where we're going with this? He also said at a charity event that I caught briefly this morning, you know, it could be 5 or 10 years more that I'm coaching. I mean, I'll let you know. He doesn't feel old. He feels young. He feels good. He does Pilates all the time. Jim's going to be here for the foreseeable future, okay? It's not over soon. We're not looking at the end. Yes, clearly, you're closer to it than the beginning, but when the body of work is basically a half a century, you see what I'm saying.
Is it polite to ask when he's going to retire at this point?
I wouldn't ask that. That's just me. But in reference to, and since I brought this up, 2022, and it's a great recruiting class, as we know. We've all been covering it and talking about it. Jim said, and this is a hell of a statement. If you really think about it, this is, to me, one of the most newsworthy things that he said. It is the best recruiting class that he's ever had. Wow.
We can't talk specifically, but it's the best recruiting class we've ever had. Period. May not have a superstar, doesn't have Carmelo, but top to bottom, the players and the coaches did an unbelievable job. The five players we have are way underrated. Mainly three of them didn't play last summer or in high school, so you know they didn't get evaluated. But when you look at balance in a recruiting class, you know, it's hard to get one guy at every position, and we did that. But I think it's an underrated class. I think these guys are better, which is good. It's good to get guys like that.
I don't know if you can see this. Well, if you're listening on the radio, you can't. My fingers are crossed. If you're with us at QSportsTalk.com, you just saw that. We'll see. I'm just happy to watch some SU basketball. I would also like to thank the comment I saw in there a little bit earlier in the chat about how we habitually kerfuffle as a little playoff of my comments about the disorganization of the Syracuse football team from time to time. We're going to talk football some more. Jordan Renan for Giants fans, ESPN's NFL Nation reporter, will join us next on ESPN Radio Exit 31 and yes, QSportsTalk.com.
This is Exit 31 with Rain and Spencer on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com.
Let's grab 10 minutes with Jordan Renan, ESPN's NFL Nation beat reporter for the New York Giants here on their home ESPN Radio, Syracuse and Utica, and all across central New York. So it's nice to be able to talk about a win. Give us your basic observations on how they got there. What was the key to the win for the Giants and getting that second win of the year?
Well, their defense played significantly better. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's that simple, right? They played an offensive line that wasn't very good, which certainly helps. Like, you know, one of the rare times the Giants played a team whose offensive line, quite frankly, was worse than their offensive line. And that really was the difference in this game. The Giants were able to get a pass rush. which they did at times last year, which helped them become a much better defense. And to me, that was the biggest difference. Also, I mean, the Giants came out to play. I mean, you could tell from the very first two plays of the game, I noted the way they were tackling, significant upgrade. I mean, they were just as a unit. That was the difference, right? That was the recipe last year for how they, when they did well, right? The defense played well. The offense scraped together just enough to win the game. And that's exactly what happened yesterday, because they're playing with kind of the same team that they had last year, a limited offensive line. The weapons are limited because of injuries, right? They were without their top four playmakers for God's sakes, which is just kind of ridiculous. And they needed their defense to step up, and they did it in a big way yesterday, finally.
Was it Pat Graham making some adjustments and figuring a few things out, or was it also poor play by Sam Darnold, who was ultimately removed from the game? And a lot of that might have been to save him a little bit from the fans and the vitriol and it being in New York, and obviously he was with the Jets.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of everything. Sam Darnold, let's be honest, he gave them that play at the end of the late in the second quarter. The Panthers actually would have went into halftime with the lead, if you think about it. Mm-hmm. But the Giants take a penalty. You know, it's a second and long. Carolina is clearly in still in field goal range. All Darnold has to do is dump the ball down twice, not try to make too much out of it. They kick a field goal. They go up 6-5, and they have the lead at halftime. But he tries to do too much, forces a throw, throws the ball into James Bradbury's chest, and ultimately the Giants end up going into halftime with the lead. It only got worse from there. But, I mean, it's like I said, it's a little bit of everything. The defense played significantly better. Their tackling was significantly better. Their pass rush was significantly better. So I'm going to give Pat Graham, and trust me, they heard everybody talking about their effort the week before, about the way they were playing. And, you know, they shored up some of the things. So I'm going to give Pat Graham credit. I'm going to give the defensive players credit. Sure, it helped that they played a Carolina Panthers offense that didn't have Christian McCaffrey. Sam Darnold didn't play well, and their offensive line was beat up and played terrible. But the Giants defense deserves credit as well for playing significantly better, because if they tackled the way they did the 2 weeks before, they would have lost that game.
Jordan Renata is with us on Exit 31. It's ESPN Radio, and we're QSportsTalk.com. He covers the Giants, of course. So Daniel Jones, first of all, he's without a lot of weapons. There's quite a few injuries impacting this team overall, but I think it was seven of 11 week one starters out, right? Top four offensive weapons out. He has limited his turnovers. You're seeing a different version of Daniel Jones, of course, made the great catch, you know, the DBJ instead of OBJ type of one-handed catch. But the narrative has spun on him a little bit, and there's more faith, I think, you know, within the team. They've always had it, but the fan base is starting to figure that out. That Daniel Jones may be developing into the guy.
It's funny because I speak to people, you know, around the league and you know, fan, and I hear from fans all the time. And I think the people that are watching the Giants closely, that are watching them every game, the fans are saying, wow, you know, look at Daniel Jones. Like, there's so much there to, like, I think he could be really good. And I've been, like, kind of driving this bandwagon all year, all offseason. Like, if you put him around the right players, he's going to be a pretty good quarterback in this league. You want to argue about his ceiling? That's fine. But to me, there's little doubt in my mind that Daniel Jones is a quality starting quarterback in the NFL. But if you go out to, like, the national perception, sort of like the general NFL fan who's not sitting there, because let's be honest, nobody is really watching the Giants these days. Mm-hmm. If you're like just a general NFL fan, they have no intrigue for the general NFL fan, like literally zero, right? They've been a bad team for a long time. Everybody knows they're not great. They're not very good this year. They're 2-5 still right now. So they're not watching them. And they sit there and they say, the second they see Daniel Jones's bad game, and I had someone say this to me today, yes, the turnovers are still a problem. You see, look at Daniel Jones and the turnovers. And it's like, okay, like that perception is obviously still out there about him. And it's kind of silly because he got better with it last year. I think he cut his fumbles from 11-6 last year. That didn't stop the narrative from still continuing, because that's still a decent chunk of turnovers. This year, though, like, he has one turnover, essentially, right? Because he has a fumble and an interception in – the five games, if you take out the Rams game, and I'm not saying you should take out a game because that is part of his resume, but he had one really bad game. He played poorly in that Rams game, for sure. But he has an interception, which was a Hail Mary, and one fumble in his other, what are the Giants? They're 2-5, right? So seven games. In six games, he legitimately has turned the ball over once. Now, he played very poorly, and when things fell apart, he turned it over a lot in that Rams game. But I don't know how you sit here and say Daniel Jones hasn't made progress in that regard. And that was the one really big question you had with Daniel Jones. So I think if you're a Giant fan or you're anyone in the organization, you have to feel good or at least significantly better about him and where he stands about his future as the Giants franchise quarterback, because I think he is their franchise quarterback. They're getting very close to, you know, having that signed, sealed, and delivered.
Talking about that extension, possibly. He's got another extra year left.
Well, let's not get carried away. I don't know about that. They have time for that, right?
Yeah.
Remember, there's still another year left on his deal. There's still a 50-year option on top of that. So there's plenty of time. You don't need to rush. As Josh Allen went and played like an MVP and blew up, it's a different story. Daniel Jones knows he hasn't done that, right? He hasn't accomplished what Josh Allen did. So there's no reason that you have to rush into that part of the equation yet.
A positive for me was Ojulari. You kind of could see it slowly developing, but he's making some plays, and I'm really looking forward to the continued development of him as he becomes more and more of a key player for this team. What a great pick in the early second round, too. First round talent in the second round. Crazy, right?
He's a good player. He's a solid player. I'm not going to sit here and pretend he's Lawrence Taylor for a second, though. Like, you need to be realistic with what you see from guys. And I think this has been a problem for Giants fans and the Giants as well. Overinflating what they have. I don't want to poo-poo Azeez Ojulari, who had a great game yesterday,
mm-hmm.
right? And he's flashed this year. But there are times that he's kind of also disappeared. A lot of times. Like, he's flashed. And yesterday was a great day for him. I think there's reason to be optimistic about what he can be as a player long-term, a good quality player. Is he a number one pass rusher? Maybe he grows into that. But there's been a lot, too many times this year where he's been quiet. I think he had zero pressures in the previous two games. So you can't just sit there and harp on the fact that he had a huge game against the backup rookie tackle who, trust me, Carolina probably would have preferred he wasn't on the field. And he had a huge game there for sure. So you have to keep in perspective what it is. Like, Oshane Zimenez had a really good rookie year. Lorenzo Carter flashed, right? Like, we have to get out of the cycle of trying to make too much out of guys, younger Giants players who show flashes. Like, it's when he's got to prove it long term until we can sit here and say that was a steal, right? But I think you could look at it also realistically and say, okay, he has a chance to be a quality player in this league, a quality starter in this league. And let's be honest with the Giants. They desperately need that at that edge rusher spot. And I feel pretty good that, okay, the Giants have an edge rusher now that you could feel confident is going to be a long-term starter barring something happening to him. Now, you still probably need a number one guy on the other side across from him, and then you'll feel a lot better about their situation. So still more work to be done, but you like what you've seen in spurts from Azeez Ojulari here his rookie year, and yesterday was one of those good days for sure.
Straight up, we need to see some consistency and continued development. Yeah, he's young for sure. Appreciate the time. Jordan Renan, ESPN's NFL Nation reporter with us on Exit 31. And by the way, keep your finger on the pulse and keep those TikToks and tweets coming up.
I like that. Look at you working that in right there.
We had
to. That's right. Jordan Renan, ESPN at TikTok. See that? That's called a plug.
There you go. Shameless plug. You worked that in like a pro as well. We'll talk to you soon, my man. Appreciate it as always. ESPN Radio, Exit 31, QSportsTalk.com. Right back with the last thing we'll say today.
This is Exit 31. Here is Rain Stradamus and Nostra Davidson on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com. Here's the last thing we'll say today.
Matt Park sent Damien Alford off to Never Neverland, making Metallica famous. Oh, wait, that's Mariano Rivera's song, isn't it?
That's correct.
Yeah. Who do you give that to? Have you seen that debate everywhere?
No.
It's a Metallica song. Mariano Rivera, of course, with his entrance music in Yankee Stadium, it kind of became his thing. But then they've used that for just over 20 years, Lane Stadium in Blacksburg, Virginia, for Virginia Tech, for their entrance. And it was a great way to close out a win, a much-needed win for Syracuse. You're going to get some reaction and analysis, I'm sure, very in-depth with Brent Axe. He's on the block in a couple of minutes. Spencer Davidson, not with us today, will not be back tomorrow, but he will be back in here, and we'll get back to things business as usual on Wednesday. Blue Guy's been hanging. Any final thoughts for you, observations? I know you were excited during the break about your Celtics finally getting a win.
Finally getting a win after three games in the NBA, finally getting a win. Nice to see. And Spencer Davidson's crying at home because the Jets got spanked by the Pats.
Yeah, we have a working theory that that's why he's not showing up. He just wants to see if it'll go away, and we won't remind him that the Glue Guys Patriots demolished the Jets. It's got to be bad to be a Jets fan. That's all I can say.
Are you really that sad for him?
No. I might have to pit you two in a kerfuffle against each other. I think that's what I might do. All right, well, that being said, we're done. We'll see you tomorrow at 2. We've got Brent Axe on the block lined up for you next. QSportsTalk.com. This has been Exit 31 on ESPN Radio. Appreciate you.